From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Reminder, Thursday is the big day of giving. So always keep that in mind. We're pleased and honored to have Trisha Trimble joins us. Timbrell from Life Teen join us. Trisha, did I butcher your last name?
Everybody does, but you did pretty well, actually.
Really?
I'm going to give you an A+, actually.
An A+? Whoa, I'll take
that. You got it right on the second try.
Yeah, you always I'm a tennis player, so you always get two serves. So
there you go. Yeah. I think that's a good analogy on names. I like that.
Very, very good. What kind of name is that?
You know what? We are like a French, German, Czechoslovakian, just European mix. So it was two actual words, but when family came over to Ellis Island, it was merged into one. So it was like Timbrell, like it was two words, and it became like one word when they came over from Ellis Island.
You know, I have a similar story in our family on my mom's side where I think they couldn't understand my great-grand, and they just wrote it. Their last name is Emch, E-M-C-H. And I think my great-grandpa just kind of went, ooh. And they wrote down Imps because they didn't know what he said.
Yeah, that happened a lot when people came over to wherever they immigrated from. The names just completely got merged or slaughtered or completely changed. So that's a fun part of doing genealogy to kind of figure those things out.
It is indeed. Well, tell us first off, and Trisha's coming out. Trisha's an easier name. We'll call you Trisha.
So much easier.
Is coming out here in about a week or so, mm-hmm. May 9th and the 10th. She's going to be in Vallejo at St. Basil's. She's going to be at the Newman Center in Chico. She's going to be at the Christ the King for a couple of presentations. One, Establishing Youth Ministry with Vision. And the second one, How to Recruit, Train, and Retain Core Team Members. Tell us a little bit first about Life Teen.
Well, Life Teen is really a Eucharistic-centered movement that started back in 1985. And our mission really is to lead teens and their families into a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ mm-hmm. and his church. And definitely a parish-based ministry because we really want to make sure that it is centered on the sacraments and really bringing teens into a parish community that's going to love them and support them throughout their young lives and also their adult lives as well.
So Life Teen is no longer a teenager.
No, it is a teenager. We're still focusing in on the teen years. All of our resources,
but it's 30 some years old now.
It is. Yeah. I know. It's not a teenager. I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, we're in our 30s.
Yeah.
So yeah. It amazes me.
Can you take us back to 1985 and tell us what the mission was?
I was 10 years old in 1985. Wow. But from what I've learned is back in 1985, it started at a little church called it's actually not that little. It's called St. Timothy's.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in Mesa, Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And it started with like a youth mass, and it really was centered on liturgy and really trying to bring teens into an encounter with Christ through the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of stems from Mother Teresa always saying, you know, like, they're like, what, how do we reach our teens? She's like, bring them to the Eucharist. Just bring mm-hmm. them to the Eucharist. And it started with the youth mass, and they had, like, what they called, like, a little, I don't know, they called it, like, a jam session or something afterwards where they just had pizza and conversation with the
sure.
teens. And then it led into having an actual youth night that we call a life night. And that's kind of what I do a lot of training on, and that's kind of the vision we're trying to create for a lot of parishes. But, like, really, the youth night resembles the liturgy. You know, mm-hmm. we gather people in, we proclaim the word of God, we break the bread, and then we're sent forth. And so every single life night is in that same type of format, is where we gather the teens in, we proclaim a teaching of the church. We break that open to them, you know, in conversations and small groups, and then we send them forth to basically the Great Commission to love, you know, the Lord, and
sure.
also to, you know, be sent forth to evangelize and bring people into the church. So, yeah, that's kind of what we're all about.
So, were you involved in Life Teen as a teenager?
You know what? I was a youth minister
mm-hmm.
in both Los Angeles, California, and then eventually in Orange County,
mm-hmm.
the two dioceses I kind of worked in. And I became aware of Life Teen when I was a teenager. I remember going to a Life Teen Mass at San Juan Capistrano Mission,
mm-hmm.
and then going to the Life Night afterwards and going, this is different. Like, there's something about this that's awakening me. And I just really kind of was drawn to it. And when I was a youth minister, the first 3 years of my ministry life, I did not do Life Teen. But then when I got into Orange Diocese at St. Columban Church in Garden Grove, California,
mm-hmm.
They had started implementing it. And then I was, like, trained, kind of what I'm doing now. I was trained in how to make Life Teen a reality at the parish and really how we could, you know, evangelize and lead teens to Christ. And so I did it for 7 years at St. Columban, and I've been working for Life Teen for about 11 now. So
wow.
I've been doing youth ministry for over 20 years, which kind of shocks me sometimes.
Do you sense, has the mission changed at all since its founding 30-some years ago?
I would say the mission hasn't changed. And this is something when I'm doing the training with a lot of youth ministers, I think there's a difference between mission and vision.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times you'll see a vision change from year to year or from every 5 years or whatever it might be. But, like, the mission typically will stay the same. The mission of leading teens closer to Christ. I think we might have added leading teens and their families because I think we need to be focusing on the families, too, in order to properly lead those teens to Christ. But the vision has expanded, I would say. I would say the mission hasn't changed, but the vision has expanded. We started with a few parishes in the beginning. Now we're up to, like, over 1,900 parishes internationally.
Wow.
It started just in the United States, and now we're in Canada, South Africa, China, Malaysia, Spain, England, Germany. I mean, we're kind of everywhere. And so how we've ministered has changed. We've also expanded to doing a lot of youth conferences and a lot of youth trainings where prior to, like, probably maybe even like 15 years ago, it was a smaller ministry, you know, and it continues to grow. We've also grown in the vision of how we minister to people online, you know, through our website, lifeteen.com. And there's just a lot that has changed and evolved in, like, just the vision of how our mission is executed. So I think that's a big change for us mainly.
So do you spend most of your time on the road now?
I spend most of my time actually on the phone and doing, I'm using technology a lot. We have a really beautiful vision of how we minister directly to a youth minister at the parish.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully a parish has invested in youth ministry in a way that they have either hired a youth minister or somebody's part-time or at least been identified as the adult who is going to be ministering to teens. That's not always the case in parishes, and that's something that I pray changes in the church, that we really do see our youth as part of the church that we really need to be investing in. So I work directly with youth ministers
mm-hmm.
and train them on how to implement Life Teen or youth ministry in general at their parishes. And so for the first year, I directly coach individual parishes. So I usually have between 150 to 175 parishes
mm-hmm.
that I'm coaching. And then I have a partner in crime who also, her name is Katie, who also ministers and does about 150 to 179 parishes. And we just work directly with them. I use a lot of technology, things like Google Hangout, you know, whatever it might be, to be able to be face-to-face and be able to pray with people,
mm-hmm.
train people, troubleshoot things that are going on in their parishes. We have some amazing staff members who also minister. We finally have a Hispanic coordinator, and she works with a lot of parishes that may need a bilingual type of training, in a sense. And we also have a wonderful man named Doug Took, who I was actually out in Sacramento recently doing some training, too. He helps parishes that are more in rural areas or just smaller multi-parish situations.
Right.
So we kind of try and target people in various areas to be able to make sure we're ministering to the parish needs.
So what's the toughest part of your job? What's the toughest part of youth ministry?
I think the toughest part of youth ministry right now, there's a couple things. When I'm working with youth ministers, the hardest thing, and that's why we're kind of trained on it, is really getting adults to want to invest in them and really minister to them.
Mm-hmm.
Getting what we call a core team, because it's so central to the ministry being effective. developing leaders, not just youth ministers, but volunteers, people responding to that baptismal call, like, it's hard to get that core team because we all say we're very busy, you know. Whenever you're asked, how are you doing? Oh, I'm good. I'm just busy. You know, that seems to be the refrain that everybody has.
Yeah, I've never run into anybody anymore. I don't even want to ask them, how are you doing? Because the roll their eyes is, oh, so busy.
Exactly. But I sit here and go, like, well, what are we busy with? You know, like, yeah. I asked a friend there, and I'm like, she was talking about a show that she had streamed online. And I was like, so you spent the weekend just watching TV? And she's like, yeah, you know, I just needed to shut off. And I'm like, man, like, we're not busy. I think we're extremely bored. Like, I really,
I was saying that to my wife the other day. I said, you know, you have cable television now with 140 channels, and it's boring. People are constantly looking at their phone, their emails, and their text messages, and Twitter, and all this stuff because they're bored. We have all this stuff now. And when I was a kid, if somebody said we could get more than three channels on the TV, exactly. I thought I was in Disneyland.
I know. It's amazing. It used to be just basically like NBC, ABC, you know.
That was it.
Fox, things like that. That was it. You know, that's all we had. And now we have endless options, but we're just filling our lives with things that really are not fulfilling us. And I don't know. Like, I hear a lot of people going, oh, what are we going to do? We see the Parkland shootings, and we see all these things, and we see these teenagers rising up. But at the same time, like, they also had amazing adults in their lives that told them, mm-hmm. you are capable of great things. You're capable of anything. And I see your worth and your dignity and your value in you. And, like, I just want to see adults rise up and say, like, I want to invest in teens because they're not our future. They're now. They're our future priests. They're our future couples getting married. They're the people that are going to be carrying this church in 5, 10, 15 years, you know, like, as far as, like, how we minister to each other. And I just think that's one of the biggest things that youth ministers struggle with. And that, because otherwise they don't have the people that are going to build relationships with the teens that are centered on Christ. And that's something that is so essential for youth ministry to be effective. We're living in atheism is on the rise. Teens are, you know, distracted just like adults are distracted. And how are we going to really reach them and bring them into that encounter with Christ? We need adults to be able to help us do that.
Indeed.
So I think that's one of the biggest challenges in our church right now as far as youth ministry is concerned. And also I think some pastors just are not seeing the investment of youth ministry. And that's something I would love to see grow and strengthen.
Well, you know, the standard joke is, we have a youth program. It's pizza and basketball and, you know, we have to keep the kids engaged kind of thing. And as you say, it's obviously the future of the church, but sometimes I think we don't see it that way. And, well, I'll tell you, fortunately, here in the Diocese of Sacramento, Bishop Soto has this one on the very front burner.
Yeah, I'm glad he does. And he actually was actually a part of the National Federation for Catholic Youth Ministry as, like, I believe the chaplain for a very long time. Mm-hmm. He was actually here in the Diocese of Orange.
Yes, he was.
So
grew up there.
I remember him coming to my confirmations and uh-huh. having great dinners with him. He's just such a joy. And I know that youth ministry is a huge passion for him. And I know that the way that the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministries is being, you know, I guess you could say staffed right now, it just shows there's such a great importance and value to it as well. And I'm really excited to see what happens in Sacramento over the next couple of years because I just think you guys are setting a very solid foundation for youth ministry to be central in parishes. So I'm excited.
Tricia Timbrell is from Life Teen, and she's going to be here on May the 9th, May the 10th. May the 9th at St. Basil's in Vallejo, and then also at the Newman Center in Chico. That's your immediate challenge, Tricia, is getting from Vallejo to Chico in the same day.
Is that hard? I did once like a road trip from San Diego up to Sacramento and then back down of like all the dioceses, and it actually gave me a really good idea. I'm like, wow, okay, so this is not far from here. And, like, I kind of figured out where everything was, so I actually really enjoy the road trips.
Interesting. I think we have 12 dioceses, and you can start in San Diego, and you get to Sacramento, you're only about halfway up the state, but you have just touched the last northern diocese.
Exactly. Yeah. And you guys are a very large size youth.
Yeah, we go all the
Maybe
way to the Oregon
border. Maybe
not
spread out as like Stockton or Fresno or things like that, San Bernardino, but it's still a beautiful big area for sure.
It's huge, that's for sure. Well, one of your talks, establishing youth ministry with vision. What do you mean by that?
I think this is the piece that a lot of youth ministers and pastors will kind of jump over. We've become a very event-based culture, from one event to the next. And even in parishes, we've come, like, we have the parish mission, and then we have, this event going on here and that event going on here. And youth ministry, to me, is an event. It's not an event. It's more of an ongoing relationship we're developing with teens. And vision is a big part of that. You asked me earlier, like, what's the mission of Life Teen? I said it's leading teens closer to Christ, but the vision has changed how that's executed from year to year. And I think a lot of times what's missing in a lot of parishes is a sense of mission in youth ministry and even in the parish itself sometimes, and how that mission is going to be executed through the vision. And, I mean, youth ministry, I love in renewing the vision, actually, and they call it, it's a document for Catholic youth ministry through the USCCB. They say that youth ministry is the response of the Christian community to the needs of the young people and the sharing of the unique gifts of youth within the larger community. And, like, how are we doing that at parishes? How are we establishing that vision? And I think what happens is we just kind of want to calendar an event. We want to know that the youth minister is busy and doing something to bring teens in. And it's an ongoing process. It's an ongoing process of conversion and evangelization. And how do we kind of establish that vision? And so I'm going to spend quite a bit of time talking about how we pray through that vision. Mm-hmm. How you talk through that vision with your pastor, how you just really execute and share that vision, to be able to get the core members, which is another session I'm going to be talking about, to get adults who are going to help you accomplish that mission and that vision. I know at my parish, St. Columban, I kept the mission of Life Teen because I thought leading teens closer to Christ was really good. And even as a youth minister, I said teens and families because I knew my pastor had a very large goal of unifying cultures through the youth. Mm-hmm. And so every year, though, how that was executed, how we did that, looked different. In my first year, it was very much about building a solid adult leadership team that would be trained to evangelize and minister directly to the teens. My whole first year was about training and building a core team. And it may seem like that's not a lot to do, but it's a lot to do. And we were still having regular youth gatherings and youth nights, and still had the confirmation program going on. But without that core team being solid in their faith and how they were witnessing that to the teens, I really didn't have a youth ministry program. And so the next year I was able to move on to something else. And, like, eventually it was unifying four cultures, Spanish, Vietnamese, Filipino, and Anglo, pulling everybody together into one program that eventually led to a universal RCIA program and a unified First Communion program, like, and everything started coming together to be one versus four separate ministries. And so that takes vision, that takes mission, and that's something that I really want to talk about with the parishes to really be able to establish that.
And that's great stuff, especially in California, where we are so multicultural, and if anybody can do it, it's the kids. I have four teenagers, and I'll tell you, they are honest to gosh. It is a blessing, but they're colorblind. Their culture, their age group, they're not hanging on to the prejudices that other parts of our society have.
It's true. I think that we're seeing that in the world. Like, my pastor actually, he was so wise, and I've thus heard about this further, but he watched World Youth Days with Pope John Paul. Mm-hmm. And, sorry, bless our Saint Pope John Paul. But he watched how he addressed the youth and the World Youth Day addresses or anything like that. And he would take those, and then after the words, he would, like, address the youth, and then he would address the church with, like, an encyclical or some writing or some sort of address our audience. He would always start with the youth and then move to the rest of the church because he knew the youth, the parents would follow. Parents paid attention to their teens. families could be moved through this. Like, it was amazing. If you really look at any World Youth Day address in light of an encyclical, he always addresses the youth, or at least he did. He always addressed the youth, and then he addressed the church. And so my pastor said, I believe the youth could help unify this parish and make it truly like one Holy Catholic Apostolic Church. Like, I really want to see that in our parish. And so he used the youth and what I was doing in youth ministry as the catalyst for the rest of the parish to follow. And so that just, like I said, that takes mission and that takes a vision. And he had that vision, and I'm like, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, by the grace of God, we're going to do this. And we just prayed through it, and year by year, step by step, it came together. So, yeah.
So that is your second workshop, how to recruit, train, and retain core team members. Is there a patron saint for that?
We're going to make one. I'm not sure. There should be. There should be a patron saint of core members or volunteers or catechists. There probably is one. But yeah, no, that's the hardest part. That really is. And I think that's where the youth ministers struggle the most. But once you get them, I mean, the family that can be created and the witness and the vision that it brings to teens is amazing. So it's beautiful. Core team is my favorite. I think a lot of youth ministers think their job is to work directly with the youth. And to some degree, yes, that's what they've been hired to do. But the reality is their job is really to manage and minister to the adults that they're working with. It can be a shock for a lot of them, too, because they're like, oh, I love working with teenagers. But then really what they're doing is ministering to the core and helping them plan and prepare nights that are going to really impact the teens and pass on the faith and pass on the truths of the church.
Yeah, very well said. And then May the 10th, you will be presenting both of these at Christ the King Retreat Center in Citrus Heights. Have you ever been to Christ the King?
I don't believe I have, so I'm excited. I've been told it's gorgeous, though.
You will hear the angels singing. I've told the story the first time I've told it before. The first time I went there for some event in the evening, it was a beautiful summer evening, and you're driving really through, you know, like L.A. traffic almost, you know, like the 8-lane freeway, and then even the surface streets are very busy and jammed and everything, and I'm going, I must be lost. There can't be this retreat center I've heard about here. And I turned off, followed the directions, and went right by it the first time because I couldn't believe it was in the, you know, sometimes you're in an urban area and you see a golf course or something and you go, wow, look at that. Look at those trees and grass. It's so nice. And I just turned down this little lane and I did. I heard the angels singing. It's just gorgeous. You will not want
to
leave.
I'm excited to come.
Yeah, you'll want to stay.
I'm going to leave immediately. That's the problem. Like, I'm like on my way the second I'm done. It's crazy. They packed me a nice little trip. They're like, you're going to come out here and you're going to go to like all these places. I'm like, awesome. Let's do this.
and then we're going to put your hat on your head and say goodbye.
Well, actually, right after that of these two training days, I'm actually going down to San Jose because I'm going to be leading a weekend women's retreat through a ministry called Blessed Is She. And so it's a Friday night into Saturday women's retreat that I'm going to be going to do afterwards. So it actually, God just said, you're going out there, and then they're like, hey, we're going to have this retreat in San Jose. I'm like, well, I'm already there. Let's do it.
You're getting the whole Northern California experience.
I am. I'm on radio. Okay, here we go. I love NorCal, and I would move there in a heartbeat if I could. Like, it's just, I'm kind of here in Orange County, and I love it too, but NorCal grows on me every time I come up there.
It's beautiful. Truly beautiful. It's God's country.
It is. I mean, and there's like every, just it's so beautiful whenever you drive around. It's gorgeous. I love it.
Yeah. I wouldn't live anyplace else, but I'm feel lucky to be here. But
you are very lucky.
We are really excited about you coming up here. And
I'm very excited to come up. It's going to be great.
Safe journey, and thanks for all you do, and thanks especially for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and God bless your ministry and everything that you're doing, and I'll be praying for you if you pray for me, okay?
Oh, absolutely. That's a deal. And, you know, if people just greeted each other or said goodbye, like, God bless you. You know, I mean, there used to be an expression, vaya con Dios, you know, like, go with God. You know, it would be a better world.
Amen. That's the truth.
Thanks, Tricia.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you too. That's Tricia Timbrell, the from Life Teen. And boy, they're lucky to have her, and we're lucky to have her here May the 9th at St. Basil's in Vallejo, also at the Newman Catholic Center in Chico, at Chico State, and then on May the 10th at two presentations at Christ the King Retreat Center in Citrus Heights. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California in the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights.
This is Lori Power, Associate Superintendent with the Catholic School Department. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lori, and thanks for all you do for our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Getting pretty near to graduation time. So what an exciting time for all those kids. The Sacred Scripture, Let Us Pray, an Introduction to Liturgy and Workshop to Worship, May 8th, May the 15th, Session 5, Sacred Music, a Treasure of Inestimable Value, and Session 6, Mass and Mission. That will be on the 15th of May, all at St. Peter and Paul Church. The phone number is 916-624-5827. St. Peter and Paul is at 4450 Granite Drive in Rockland. The classes are 6:30 to 8 p.m., and they're taught by our good friend James Cavanaugh, director of the Office of Worship and Prayer. And if you've never heard a presentation from James Cavanaugh, you're really missing something. He really just, not only does he know his stuff, obviously, but he has a great way of presenting it. So May the 8th, Sacred Music, and May the 15th, Holy Mass and Mission. Mass and Mission, living a sacramental life in a secular world. Again, call 916-624-5827. Well, we're pleased to be joined by Sister Suzanne Jabro from the great city of Los Angeles. Sister, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very, very good. It is
wonderful.
Great to hear your voice.
Thank you very much.
You've hopefully returned home from Sacramento.
I returned home from Sacramento.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your vocation.
Well, I'm a sister of St. Joseph of Carondelet, mm-hmm. and currently I'm on the provincial team here in Los Angeles for our community, and we're in the Los Angeles province, but we are at one congregation across the U.S. with major places in Los Angeles, St. Louis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Albany, New York, and a mission in Peru. So we're all spread out all over, and our mission is a lot like the mission of St. Vincent de Paul Society, I mean, to continue the mission of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And we, our charism is love of God and love of neighbor without distinction.
Mm-hmm.
And as Vincent shares it, as I shared the other night with the members of the society, that he looked at it a little bit differently, but his image, his vision was that of the cross, if you may, and it was vertical to God and horizontal to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And he really is a mystic, but in the sense that he lived in through his experience with the poor, and that's how Christ came to him and how it went out from him and came back to him. So that was the relationship. It was, he said, both loves inseparable. So it was a joy to speak to such a wonderful group and so many representatives of the Catholic parishes in Sacramento.
Yeah,
it's that was a, really great.
It's a very active ministry.
It's very active. Yes. Yes, we should partner more. I told them that I worked in prisons for 40 years. Mm-hmm. I directed for two dioceses, Los Angeles twice, and Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I did teach in Vallejo, California, St. Basil's,
oh, really?
When my first assignment.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was like coming full circle here. But I've spent so much time in prison, and then that evolved to this Get on the Bus program. And Bishop Soto, whom I've known for quite a while, he invited me to come and speak about Get on the Bus, because mm-hmm. so many of the parishes are involved, and you have 9 state prisons
right.
in the Sacramento Diocese. So
right.
that's what I did.
Wow. So, so are you native of Los Angeles?
I am a native of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you, but you taught in St. I had my first experience with St. Basil last year, attending the they have an annual vocations dinner in the diocese, and they move it around.
Oh,
and it's a huge diocese, of course. And
yes,
they
sure.
said, well, this time it's going to be at St. Basil's in Vallejo.
Oh, and my God!
We went down there, and it was just a wonderful experience. What a wonderful parish!
Yes, it was a great place. There are young women who were in the 7th grade. And we still get together after all these
I can
years.
Believe it.
Still get together, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some still live in the, you know, live in Vacaville or Benicia or Vallejo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know they stay pretty close.
I remember when I was in college, we did some legal counseling with our limited legal knowledge. We weren't lawyers at the prison in Vacaville.
Oh yeah,
and it was so eye-opening. I kind of had a romantic vision of all of that, you know, was pretty wet behind the ears.
Uh-huh.
And went in, and the stark reality, just hearing the gate close behind me, you know.
Oh, yes.
Was,
oh, yes.
It was, and then walking among, you know, and you know, they gave you all this. This is, 40 years ago, and...
Uh-huh.
And or longer, and bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's actually almost 50 years ago now. But
yeah.
you know, the they give you all these rules and regulations, and don't do this and all that. And,
exactly.
But then you're sitting there one on one with somebody, and you know, I of course went in figuring everybody there was innocent, and everybody there had gotten a raw deal, and there were probably a lot of them really, you know, hadn't had a break in life. But, you know, and then in the course of talking to a lot of these guys came to find out that, you know, they actually did the crime. And it was just eye-opening to see how you know, they started it as babies like everybody else did. And how did their life lead them to this spot, you know? And some of them were in there for life and for very serious crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it's always stuck with me, that experience.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, I know there's all kinds of people have all kinds of different ideas about prison and incarceration and rehabilitation and punishment and all these things and restorative justice. But then I heard about your Get on the Bus program, and I thought, what a marvelous idea!
Yeah, well, it was actually it came from the women. You know, we went to. We knew there was a 500% increase in the number of women going to prison in California.
Mm-hmm.
And we went up to the prisons, and there was a delegation, and they were all the major women religious leaders who had mother houses here in California. And we drove to Chowchilla so we could meet with the women to tell them that we were concerned about them and ask them what they needed. And when we gathered with the first group, they shared that they never saw their children, And they started to cry, and then it started with the begging, please help us, can't you help us?
Mm-hmm.
And so so we met with one prison with 60 women, and that's all they wanted, and we went next door, and that's all they wanted. And so we came back. We were not trying to start a program. We were just trying to think, what could we do? And so anyway, long and the short of it, we started one bus to one prison. And the prison gave us the names of 9 families.
Mm-hmm. And this was what year?
This was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Mother's Day 2000, we ran that first bus with these 9 families, which had 17 kids,
mm-hmm.
and they hadn't seen their mothers between 4 and 11 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was shocking. You know, they told the stories of how their mothers had the children. And they didn't have the money. The car wasn't good enough. It was 6 hours from San Bernardino. It was 4.5 from Los Angeles, 3 from the Bay Area, I think 2.5 from Sacramento to this Chowchilla prison.
Yeah, it's all of that. Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, so anyway, that's how it started. And then another prison next door said, would you do it here? Would you do it here? And this year it was over 40 buses. We will have for the season, and we will go to 12 prisons, Mother's Day and Father's Day.
And Father's Day.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We're coming to Folsom in June. We'll go to women's and men's Folsom.
Now, are most of the kids who haven't seen their mom or their dad for a while, is it economic? Is it distance? Is it?
It's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's economic, really economic, because you have to be able to drive a long ways, and your car better be good.
Right.
You better have gas money. And then you have to feed everyone. And in the prison, you have to use the machines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very costly. A bottle of water is $2.
Yep.
So if you're going to feed the whole family and the prisoner, then you that's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put everybody back in the car and drive home because you can't afford a hotel.
Sure.
You know, it's just, it's too much. And most of these are the woman's who's in prison. It's her mother, usually, or
it's
her grandmother
uh-huh. mm-hmm.
who are raising these children.
Yep, yep.
You know? And
so
sometimes the children are spread out with other family members.
Sure.
So when you have a get-on-the-bus event, the kids come in on different buses from different cities, and they're reunited.
So if a kid, let's say a son of a woman who's incarcerated, lived in Chowchilla or very close to Chowchilla, how often would they be allowed to visit if they were willing?
They could come. It's not if they're willing. It's if they have transportation to get there.
Right.
They would have to come. I mean, they could go every weekend.
They could go every weekend.
They have 2 days, mm-hmm. Saturday and Sunday. But the thing is, and it's what I shared last night, is that we're going to pick up a program in partnership with the Department of Corrections coming soon,
mm-hmm.
Which will bring people every week to the women's prison, just to the women's prison,
mm-hmm.
because they gave an extra visiting day to the men's prisons. But when they tried to do that at the women's prison, it became clear, why would you do it? No one visits women.
Hmm.
Women visit men. But
mm-hmm.
Children have to be accompanied by a caregiver.
Right.
Somebody. They can't just go to the prison.
Sure.
And
sure.
then how are they going to get to the prison, you know?
Right.
So, and they have to have, you know, documents, like
mm-hmm.
the original birth certificate.
Yeah, they're not just going to ride their bike over after
no,
school.
No, they're not going to ride their bike after school.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And negotiating it all is very, that's what we found was so difficult. I go, my God. You know, what kind of a degree do you have to have to fill out these forms? You
right,
know?
Right.
So now we take people through training. We say, these are the trick questions. Be sure the families fill them out correctly because they'll deny them otherwise, you
mm-hmm.
know. So, you know, we've learned a lot along the way.
Where is the Department of Corrections on this? Have they been?
They're great now.
Okay, good.
They're great now.
Mm-hmm.
They, we were just up in Susanville, which is also in your diocese.
Right.
We brought 3 buses from Southern California. The family stayed 3 days because the ride was so long.
Oh, it's a very long
ride. They went overnight.
Yeah,
and one of your parishes, I think in Rockland, they met the family for lunch, served lunch, and then they went on to Susanville.
Mm-hmm.
And the prisoners took up a collection, and so that their families could stay at hotels, motels, in the area.
You know, it's such a long ride from Southern California. It's such a beautiful town.
Yes, it is.
But
and
I think that's High Desert State Prison, I think.
Yes, it is. And they, you know, the staff was tremendously supportive and, you know, helped so much, you know, because it's so isolated.
Yeah,
very. So people want to help. They were more than willing to allow it, you know, so they were very appreciative.
Boy, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it really was.
Do you know, in sentencing people, is there any consideration in terms of where they're sent? Is there any consideration about family visitation?
Well, I would say no, initially. If a person's been in prison for a while, they can request to change to another prison due to the fact that there is a problem for the family, and it would be make it easier if they were closer, and and then consideration will be made.
Right.
But that takes a long time.
Sure.
So people have, you know, it depends on the level of the prison.
Sure.
So that's a part of it. And then they try to split up gangs so that you don't have enemies in your area. So it's an interesting, I don't know how they do it actually. So many people, but anyway, that's how that works.
Wow. So has your program changed at all since 1999, other than growing?
It's grown a lot. I think when we will have the family express for the women, that will help, because that means it's not just children, but it can be extended family, which means that any prisoner, woman prisoner, who has served a long time will begin to see her parents again, because they're too elderly to make the trip, but they can go on a bus from their city. So I've seen that. I've seen when we opened it up to the men's prisons, that was significantly different. Mothers and fathers are different with their children.
Right.
And, you know, the fathers are always throwing their kids up in the air and, you know, clowning around with them, and the moms are holding them and cuddling them and doing their hair and all that. But since we've been going for quite a while, we will accompany children if the caregiver allows us by signing a notary. We'll accompany a teenager to the prison who wants to see their dad. And maybe the wife, former wife, doesn't want to go, but since we accompany, they will allow the child to come. So they arrive to the bus with a photo of their father, who they are meeting for the first time. And those visits are extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, extraordinary. Yeah. And so many of them look so much alike. They look like twins, you know. Oh my goodness. But imagine, you know, meeting your dad for the first time.
Unbelievable.
You know, you have a child. This study's been done of how much better children do when they have access to their parents, which is their right, by the way. But it really is. It proves that it is better for them. Now, there are voices of challenge, so I want to speak to you about those. See, the parent signs the children up, but there are prisoners who have restrictions on seeing their children, and they're not allowed. We never see those applications.
Right.
So, and that could be, you know, they were taking drugs, a child was in the house, it's child endangerment.
Right.
So they may
not
see them until they're 18.
So
we don't see them, and we call every home and say, you know, so-and-so signed up his children, would like to see them, would you like to come? And they may say, you know, the child's going through something, I just don't think it's a good time right now. We say, fine. So if they choose not to come, that's their choice. We're not trying to coerce. They would know better. They're the ones who live with the child.
Sure.
So we're taking the people who really want to go but who just can't afford it. And so that's who we have on the bus. That's why there's snacks on the bus. We pay for lunch at the prison. We pay for dinner on the way home. If we go for an overnight trip from Southern Cal, like we will for San Quentin, then we'll go to a parish. We'll go all night. We'll go to a parish. They'll serve us breakfast. They'll all change their clothes and freshen up, and then we'll go to the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then we head home. Because the trip is so long.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's so long. Yeah. It's exhausting, too.
Well, it's nice to hear that there are parishes along the way. Where
there are tremendous yeah. parishes. Oh, my gosh. And it's interfaith now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, there's a synagogue, and there are the Methodists and Presbyterians and Episcopalians. I mean,
it's wonderful.
They're all chipping in, and people get the mission. They really mm-hmm. do. Uniting children with their parents in prison. You know, it's not that hard.
Sister, if people want to learn more, do you have a website?
We do. It's Get on the Bus.
Get on the Bus. That's easy.
Never get on the bus. Or the agency is called the Center for Restorative Justice Works.
Very good.
Get on the Bus is the flagship program, but there are three other programs as well.
Very, very good. Well, we'd love to have you back another time to
thank you. Thank
talk
you so
about
much.
Those programs, too.
Yes, wonderful. Well, keep up the good work.
Hey, you
Thanks
too,
for
sister.
For the opportunity.
Hey, thank you. God bless.
Bye-bye.
As Sister Suzanne Jabro, who was the featured speaker, the keynote speaker at the St. Vincent de Paul dinner last Friday night, and their annual dinner for the poor. And it shows you what one person can do, and it's been enormously valuable program. Just go to Get on the Bus, and you can learn all about it and learn how you can participate as well. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. The Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, First Communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop Sauer is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to The Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lincoln. Thanks for all you do. And again, graduation's coming up pretty soon. They're always fun to attend and always very tear-jerking, moving moments for all those kids and their parents and their grandparents and everybody else, their friends. Jennifer Campbell joins us.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Family camp.
Yes.
Camp Pendola.
At Camp Pendola.
You have a little bit of marshmallow on your face.
Well, yeah.
She just returned from More Than S'mores, the big fundraiser. And
funny story, I was called up to do my little speech about how great Pendola is, and I was literally roasting a marshmallow and taking a bite. I was like, oh, I forgot that was me now.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun.
And you raised good money for some scholarships.
For some scholarships, camperships. Yes. Yeah. Camperships to come up to camp. So,
That's great.
It was a pretty fun time. Even if I did have a little marshmallow on my face.
And the food was good?
Food was good. Always good.
Yeah.
Barbecue. Mashed potatoes, the kind
do
you of stuff.
Do they cater it? Or?
We have it catered, yep.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because, you know, none of us want to have
Who
to.
Who wants to cook?
Who wants to cook? Yeah. I mean, we do that all summer. Yeah. So we had great MCs. It was former staff, our kitchen manager from last year, and Lizzie, who has been on the show before,
yeah.
our program coordinator. So, yeah.
Very good.
It was a fun time.
Very good. So family camp's coming up?
Family camp is coming up. It'll be Labor Day weekend, which is, I mean, seems very far off, but it's good to start planning these things now. It's the September 1st through the 3rd. It'll be up at Camp Pendola in Camptonville, and it is just a really fun weekend. Bring your family up.
That's a Saturday through a Monday.
It's a Saturday through
and
a Monday.
Holiday.
Monday's the holiday.
For most people.
Yeah, for most people. So everyone leaves pretty much a little bit after breakfast on Monday just to kind of beat the traffic coming down from Tahoe on 80, but not everyone. Sometimes some people stay a little till lunch. But we have activities all weekend. We have the pond is still open, and so we have people swimming.
The pond should be warm by then because it's been there getting heated all summer.
In theory, yeah.
In theory, yeah.
In theory, you're right. We do some hiking. We'll do some archery while we're up there. Arts and crafts, but it's really a time for families just to, like, it's pretty self-directed with the families. We have staff there that will set up activities, and it's the family's choice whether or not they go on a hike or do an activity with us. And so it's really fun. Last year, we had almost 100 people there.
Wow. So families bring the kids.
There are some families, it was just, you know, parents or two adults that their kids, their, you know, kids have grown up and they're retired and they came with some other friends of theirs. But yeah, it was family, parents bring the kids. We have little ones, you know, we had babies this last year and then all the way through high school kids.
Are a lot of the parents former campers?
Some are, but not that many. It's sometimes it's families that had, their child maybe wanted to go to camp, but they weren't sure if they could make it. So it's kind of a way to test it out and for them to get comfortable with camp. A couple of the families were former staff. It's all the runs of the gambit of people. And it was just such a fun, funny weekend and, so many different people and, you know, everyone coming for a different experience, but.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So how do you put more than one family in a cabin?
So we were able to work it out where it was just one family per cabin, because some families will bring their RVs if they haven't. We don't have hookups, but they can sleep in there use the bathhouse and stuff like that. But yeah, so we had one family per cabin. Plus we opened up the two dorms that normally our staff are in, which hold 20 people or so in each one. In each of those, it was more than one family in there, but it was families that are like related. Right. So they're like cousins. The kids are all cousins. Yes. Siblings are, you know, so then it wasn't awkward. But so it's one, you know, we have enough space and a couple of families did tent camping and, you know, just whatever they're comfortable with. We have a lot of space that they can do that. So.
So do you do special events during family camp that you wouldn't do when it's just kids?
For sure. For one thing, at our campfire at night, we do s'mores, which we do not do during the summer. At the campfire that they do on their overnight, they'll do s'mores. But at our big campfires where we've got, you know, almost 100 people out there, no, we don't do that. But with this, we make s'mores after campfire, after the story, because we usually... Campfire is filled with skits and songs, and then we end with quiet time where myself or one of the other staff members read a quiet story.
Do you have to change the menu in the kitchen because you have so many adults?
We did a little, but not much. I mean, it's a little fancier. Maybe we pay a little more attention to the salad bar.
Or you just change the name of the dishes?
Yes. I mean, we do our best, but, you know, hamburgers are a staple for anyone. Sandwiches.
You call it a ground steak.
Though. Exactly, right. Steak tartare. that just means really rare.
Really rare.
Really rare. We changed it up a little bit. It's a little fancier food, but... it's good for the parents, and they always seem to have a good time.
Everybody wants to be a camper.
Everybody wants to be a camper. It does give parents an opportunity to just be with their kids instead of having to direct their kids in an activity. I mean, we'll have staff there to help lead the activity and show the kids how to do it. And parents can then just participate with their child in, you know, making lanyards or... tie-dyeing or whatever. And honestly, that's some of the best conversations. Just sitting making friendship bracelets or lanyards is some of the best conversations that I will have with kids all summer and my staff all summer. So to give parents that opportunity to really just like sit and be present with their kids because they have no cell phone reception.
Right,
so,
right.
So you really are just present with the people you're with when you're at camp, which is one of the beautiful things about Camp Pendola is that you know, forced maybe or not, you have to be present because... There's no way to check your phone.
Well, and as opposed to normal camp where people are coming in on Sunday and leaving on Sunday, Sunday's in the middle of this one.
Sunday's in the middle of this one.
You got to have Holy Mass.
We do have Mass for sure.
But you always have Mass.
Mass at camp, yeah. But yeah, we'll have Mass on Sunday. We'll usually do it a little bit later. It's possible we'll do it Saturday. We really try to work with the priest that's coming up to see when it's going to fit.
Who can make it?
Who can make it, when they can fit it in their schedule, because it is a commitment and we are asking them to drive up for us.
But you do have a beautiful chapel.
We do have a chapel. We might do Mass outside. That's up to the priest as well. And depending on timing. But yeah, we do have Mass that day for our families. Last year, Father Chuck Kelly came up for Mass, and it was great joy to see him and for him to be connecting with the families. And it was funny, one of the families that was there, he had married them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was even like, it was kind of a surprise. He's like, "What are you doing here?" And the wife was all excited. She's like, "He married us." Like, she was so great. Excited about it. So it was kind of a cool connection that we got last year, but yeah.
Very good.
I mean, it's fun.
So now camp's already over by that time, right?
It is.
So
camp is already over.
Do you have to hire a whole new crew?
No, it's staff that maybe they've started school or they're local, or, you know, some of them have not started. If they're on a quarter system,
right,
then they'll start later.
Yeah,
maybe not till almost October.
Oh, that's right.
So we have staff in that circumstance. And then if they're going to Sac State or Chico, they're close enough that they just drive up for that weekend. And so we'll get the commitment from the staff, you know, first week of staff training.
They probably love it.
You know, some people really love it. It's just, it's different. One of the staff that was with me last year, I was like, "We should just do family camp every week." And she was like, yeah, okay. It's just different because you're just, you know, with your cabin, and the kids, it's a longer day. And you know, it's just a different experience, but yeah, they do.
Can you sign up for it already?
You can sign up for it already. You register just like you would for camp at camppandola.org.
Very good. And you're still taking registrations for regular camp?
Yes, I am. For camp, we are taking them. It's pandola.org. I don't know why I added camp in there. It's just pandola.org. Registration is up. It's the same registration portal that we use for camp, that we use for the family camp as well.
Very good.
Yeah.
Jennifer, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bob.
So much. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love, and you can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation by calling 916-851-2700. Fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts is for all of us. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. Give them a call. They're at 916-338-7272 or drop on and visit them, 6916-6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Well, if you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to where you want to go. Details are available at Crumley & Associates. They're at 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks, or give them a call at 916-638-4600. We thank them for their longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. Underwriting is also provided to the Bishop's Hour by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call, 855-525-2285. We thank all the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Hour, and we hope you will support those who support us. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.